Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You hang up being there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
All right, today, we're sort of going to do trending topics, but we're going to start off a little bit later here this morning with our start-off topic, and it's called Shut Up House. What is a Shut Up House? So we're going to be talking about what is a Shut Up House plus the power of 1 acre. So we'll be back in a few minutes.
Take the house to rule the house.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right. We're going to lead off later soon this morning. Because the title that we have up here on the marquee is Shut Up House. We're going to talk about our Shut Up House, but that's real quick. That's real brief. But we're going to throw some trending topics up there as well. One of the trending topics that we're going to talk about, I just ran across it. Here's the headline. Durham City Council rejects a federal jury's recommendation. This is Durham, North Carolina. Durham, North Carolina City Council rejects a federal jury's recommendation to pay wrongfully convicted man $6 million after he spent 2 days in prison for a crime he didn't commit. So we're gonna talk about that one a little bit. And I like to read something here from one of my global buddies. She lives in Kiev, or some people pronounce it Kiev, in the Ukraine. And she sent me, I check on her, every day. So I hadn't heard from her in about 2-3 days. And here's what she sent me a note this morning. Matter of fact, a few minutes ago. She says, "I'm Kiev." That's her home for right now. "It's quiet here now. I went to work for the first time in 50 days. She's a dentist, by the way. Excuse me. "Although I only had two patients, I was happy. This is the beginning. Although it is not known for how long it will be quiet, that many people have left Ukraine, as we know. Others have no money, but at least something." Now, I read that because I'm thinking, nowhere in my communication with her. They have bombed her city. But she never plays the role of victim. Whereas we have people over here that the only time that they've heard an explosion or seen some type of bomb is on TV or in a movie. But here's a person that's actually in a town where they have bombed. Never a victim story. So we're going to talk about that too, if you guys want to. So in any event, We'll be right back after, wait a minute, we'll be back here. Oh, anything else you guys want to talk about after Steve Harvey? And because if anybody's walking Faith Street, it's these people in the Ukraine.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was. but I am who I am, and I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect, no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay. The brief topic that we'll talk about a little bit later this morning will be what we have on the marquee is shut up. What the hell is a shut up house? So it's brief, but we're going to talk about that. We have a shut up house, which is which will be part of our shut up series. But we'll go through that a little bit later this morning. Open mic, trending topics. One of the trending topics that I mentioned a few minutes ago, in North Carolina, the Durham City Council rejects a federal grand jury's recommendation to pay a wrongfully convicted man $6 million after he spent two decades in prison for a crime he did not commit. Now, this guy, what's his name? Black guy, too. He's a victim. Daryl Howard, that's his name. Daryl Howard. Daryl Howard is a real-life victim here in 2022. He was wrongly convicted, proven by the court of law, that he was wrongly convicted. He spent 20 years in prison. And a jury, said that the city of Durham, North Carolina, needs to pay this man $6 million. Now, by him being wrongfully convicted, number one, and spending 20 years in prison in the state of North Carolina, number two, all right, those are two injuries. That makes him a victim, and people like him deserve reparations. And a jury in North Carolina, federal jury in North Carolina, says that, you know, he needs to be paid $6 million by the city of Durham, North Carolina. Now, that's what I call reparations. Of a person that really deserves reparations. However, the city council in North Carolina, you know what, Durham? Let me look that up. Let me see what they look like. City council. Wait a minute. Yeah, hold it. City Council, Durham, North Carolina. All right. See, because part of the whole thing with reparations is it has to be proven. Now, in this case, it was proven in a court of law that this man had been injured. The two injuries are, number one, he was wrongfully criminally convicted. That's injurious. And then number two, he spent 20 years in prison. So that's injury number two. This is 2022. So how can the city of and the federal jury tasked with how can this man be repaired, prepared, reparations? This jury, federal jury in North Carolina, said the city of Durham, North Carolina, needs to pay this man $6 million, and I agree with the jury. This is a real-life example in 2022 how a person in 2022 is deserving of reparations. However, the city of North Carolina, now this is a proven, here's one thing. The city of North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, doesn't want to pay. So we're going to take your comments on that. But here's another thing I want to ask you people, particularly the ADOS people. Okay. Now, here's a textbook case of an example of reparations. Textbook case of a victim, a textbook case of who victimized this man, and a textbook case of it going through the legal system, and the legal system through the federal jury system says this man needs to be paid $6 million. Real reparations. Now, here's the question I want to ask you, ADOS people. How can you prove in 2022 that you have been injured by something that happened 200, 300, 400 years ago? Because you didn't live 200, 300, 400 years ago. This man is a clear paper trail of how he was injured, and he's deserving of what the federal jury said, $6 million. However, the powers that be in Durham, and if the city of North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, they spent $4 million to try to get out of this. And they want to spend more because they don't want to pay it. But they spent $4 million already. Well, we'll be back to take your calls on that in a few minutes.
Do you all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe as a race, African Americans, we play the victim?
Hey, man.
I have a dream.
No. I'm just going to leave that as a one-word answer. I'm not even going to jump in deeper than that. No.
Yeah, I'm on the side of absolutely not, and I will leave it there until somebody disagrees.
Yeah, then I'll jump back in. And now I'm going to step back.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm going to be real. I'm going to say yes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say yes.
Give me an example.
See, it's a loaded question. Just because I'm not gonna sit here and say every single African American sides either on the yes side or on the no side.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes to mainly spark conversation, but also I know you're not talking. You said not personal experiences, but that's all I got to go on. I will say, you know, just based on where I am in life, I've gotten a lot of pressure from African Americans feeling like, you know, I've gotten to where I am because of white people, or you didn't grow up like I did. Like I came from the hood, you know, I didn't have the same opportunities and privileges that other people had. And though, you know, I believe that to be true, in today's America, I really do feel like anybody has the opportunity to rise to the occasion. Now, is it easier for certain people over others? Yeah. I mean, let's be real. Yes. Like, that's 100% true. But, you know, I just keep hearing, like, systemic oppression, this, that, and the third. Like, yeah, we get it. I know. Like, we all know. Like, we all know. But the opportunities are still there. Will you have to work a little bit harder to get to where you want to be? Absolutely. Because of how you look? Absolutely. I'm a testament of it.
Anybody gonna say nothing?
Go ahead. I want to hear this.
I think it's impossible to accuse us of playing the victim. You're talking about a 400 plus year head start for a particular set of people. You're talking about systematic oppression. That's what I meant by a post-traumatic state. Is we're at this stage in 2020. We're trained to say, yeah, it's unequal, but, and that's just not okay to me. I don't think we should ever get to the place where we just accept inequality.
Correct.
I'm not encouraging stagnation. So I agree with you. I'm not encouraging throwing in the towel like, yo, it's not fair. That's not what I'm saying at all. But while striving to be your best self, you should never accept inequality. And I think that's what we're being trained to kind of just be like, yo, this is just the way it is, and to no longer call it out. And I'm not even saying we got to go picket, protest. I'm not saying none of that. But at least in conversations like this, if we're not going to set a standard, no standard is going to be set. Nobody else is going to stand it. Nobody else is going to set it. You're talking about, statistically, like factually speaking, at the onset of the 20th century, you're talking about land owners only giving land to specific races. That's generational wealth. Yeah. You're talking about bank loans only being given to specific races.
How can you?
That's generational wealth.
Correct.
So we can't. It's not even like this is ancient history. That's what blows my mind. This is recent history.
But he didn't say that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was, "Do we play the victim?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very different. You're aware of the things that have happened, but are you victimized as a result of it?
So,
do you say, this is what I can do with what I have been allotted or whatever my place in life is? Are we playing the victim is the question.
Well,
I think we
have to define play the victim.
Okay.
Right, I think we are the victim.
Because anybody can be a victim.
I think we are factually a victim.
So all races can be victims.
So what do we call in playing the victim?
What do you see that as then?
What do I see what as?
Playing the victim. Like when you hear that, like what does that trigger for
play,
you?
Play the victim means I'm acting like something is being done to me that's not being done
or
to me.
Or always complaining.
That's what I hear.
Always complaining about our history.
That's what I hear when I hear play the victim. Like you're taking the position that something being done to you and nothing's being done to you. That's somebody playing a victim to me.
This is what I
and
hear.
And that's not the case to me.
This
you know
is
what I mean?
I hear.
Yeah.
Get over slavery. Stop talking about it. We're all equal now. You should be ahead. You should be further than where you're at. Stop talking about the old days. I'm gonna stop right there.
Yeah,
that's what it triggered in my head.
Mm-hmm. So to say like we can't. I don't think you can outrule or like just say, hey, some black people aren't playing the victim because everyone uses excuses.
Correct.
And people can be playing the victim by whatever excuse they may bring. But like you said, like we weren't given an opportunity basically to build that generational wealth. And without that opportunity, we don't own anything. So we are having to kind of look for employment like at wherever you work. And even you said there's one person at D1 that's black. And we're 15% of the nation. That's not an accurate representation of America. So therefore, we may not be playing the victim, but we're getting hurt in corporate America or wherever part of life.
Yeah,
that's kind of just statistics.
I'm going to agree with him. I also don't like the term playing the victim because it does sound like you're alluding to something that is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
mm-hmm.
if I'm not dismissing or negating the effects of 400 years of oppression.
Sure.
And, you know, the things that we've seen and been through, I'm not dismissing any of that. But if we cut it all off and we started with a year ago, we are still being victimized by the stuff you have to see on TV. You have African-American boys who at the age of 11 or 12, all they have ever seen were African-American boys being killed on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they've ever seen. They've not known the life without it because they've watched this happen since they've been old enough to understand.
Mm-hmm.
They are victims. You can go into a grocery store. You can go into an amusement park. You can go anywhere and be mistreated, and you will be a victim today. We're not talking about the victimization only of the yesteryears. You can be a victim tomorrow. And I think if we're all honest, we have been in places where you have been the victim.
That's right.
You were
of
either
course.
Wrongly accused or wrongly criticized or maybe let's not even make it a negative thing. Looked over for a job unjustly. it's happening. So there's a rationale to the relevancy of still being victimized.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I was to her point, it's not even like this is ancient history. We're talking about 1960s, 1970s. Like the Civil Rights Act was just passed halfway through the 20th century. Like it's not even hundreds of years ago. Like there are people alive still, like you know what I mean,
who went through segregation that are still alive. Like, it's not even,
of course.
You know what I mean? It's not even ancient history. So I can never agree that the responsibility is on us to fix the mistakes of others. I could never agree with that. I just can't.
And it doesn't take away, you know, something that I said on the back end of my last answer. At some point, as a family, as a community, you can gather the people you love and say, let's get us out of
this. Correct.
And then you could say, well, we're no longer playing the victim. We took pride and took our own responsibility. And then you can build all that up, and tomorrow you can go somewhere and still be disrespected.
To that point, in my initial answer to you, I said I'm not making an excuse for stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not no excuse to be stagnant.
Yeah.
It's not no excuse to not grind and hustle and get out here and get it. But even if his question is about us as a race and as a culture,
mm-hmm.
and if I get my family together and pull my family up, that's my family.
Exactly.
You feel me?
That's
not balancing the scales.
That's right.
You know
and
what I'm saying?
It's very interesting. Your point is very, very interesting because I could be an extremely successful black man in today's America and still go somewhere tomorrow and be looked down upon because of what I look like.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, because I remember like Booker T. Washington, like the 1890s, to like kind of offset the Jim Crow laws. He was
not
like,
saying
hey,
I'm that old, right? I'm not trying to give you some
you remember
factual.
Him, right?
Yeah. I didn't go. Make sure you know I didn't go to school.
All right, brother.
I'm the historian.
He said basically.
My grade showing that much, though, for real.
I was going to ask you this. So you said basically to offset the Jim Crow laws that were put in place, we had to educate and be entrepreneurs. And you two have both done that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear your experience, because this is, what, 130 years later for him saying, hey, we need to mobilize on our own, get education, and be entrepreneurs. And that will create our own system of wealth. But, I mean, you're only, like you say, you're only one person. It's hard to pull up a whole group.
Of course.
So I'd kind of like to hear y'all's experience as being entrepreneurs.
You can talk, Mignon.
I was going to let you go first.
Simone owns her own shop, too, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking it in. I'm sorry. Listening right now.
Well, like I said, I was kind of raised in an entrepreneurial family, right? I was always taught, don't work. I'll just be honest, my father, don't work for the white man. That was it, right? You get education, anything you could take, put it towards your own business. Put your own 2 feet on the ground. Save your money. You know, get a hustle. You know, he's showing me all these things to do. So it was always in my mind that I had to work for myself. The only way I'm going to come up is to work for myself. So I was never trained to, you know, you're going to get a great education, then you're going to go get a great job, and then you're going to be successful, then you're going to raise a family. That was out. Go get your own brand. Raise your family. Give your brand to your family.
Mm.
Let them continue that generational wealth. So that's the way I was taught.
Mm.
And that's the way I got to keep it moving.
Okay.
Rephrase the question that you had specifically.
Basically, what I was saying is Booker T. Washington said to offset any type of segregation or discrimination or from playing the victim, we need to educate and be entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Has that experience kind of help you push through, and have you been able to bring others up because of your entrepreneurship?
Okay, so thank you for that question. I definitely believe that entrepreneurship is freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimate freedom. I was writing down a thought just yesterday as I was flying through Chicago that one sign of enslavement is a name change. That when people say that you're something, that you're not. So if I was to like go and address the same idea with biblical characters, we could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Mm-hmm.
That was not their name.
Yes.
It was their name that they were given in enslavement. And I can just imagine how they were in a room together and, you know, one of them yelled, hey, Shadrach, dude, that is not my name. I'm Toby. you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I feel like we have a responsibility to know who we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have a responsibility to do our due diligence to make our name great. That somebody can walk around and call you a liar. Is that who you are?
Yeah.
That's not who you are. Somebody can walk around and call you a thief. Is that who you are? That's the name that the enslavement has given you, right? And so I think that the only way that we can exercise true freedom is in ownership of our stuff, of ourselves, of our actions, of the things that we create, that we can be makers. I think that this is the time for all hustlers to unite, you know, that we all can make whatever we want to be a part of. We no longer have to sit back and say, oh, it's because of what you did to me. Listen, I was molested as a child. So if we want to go back and talk about victimization of the things that people have done to us, we can do that. Or we can rise above it and we can say, well, this is who I am now. This is what I'm going to do. When I started my business, I could not bake, not even out of a box. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any credit. I didn't have any experience in the business. Nobody was going to give me a loan for anything. I was losing the house that the very bakery exists in right now, 11 years later. Because when you put your mind, this is what I was saying earlier, we can be focused on what happened for us instead of what has happened to us. I believe that it is that blood running through my veins that had things taken from her. You know, it is that blood running through my veins that said, no, you can't come in here. It's that blood that is running through my veins that made my great-grandfather one of the first to be able to sing where he sang. And those are the things that I'm using today to get me from where I am to where it is that I want to be. And it's those things that I'm giving to my children and saying, this is what you have. We're not talking about what we're not. We're talking about what we are. Mm. And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what we are, what are we doing right as a culture that's setting up our children to have wealth? What are we doing right as a culture to where our children's children will know our names? Are we doing things right as a culture to change the narrative of our finances of our children?
I can only answer that as an individual and then see what we and my wife also tried to do and spread, right? You know, we're all about giving back. We're all about showing and proving. You know, I want to be that beacon that this young brother said, you know what? I want to do what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? I want to go out and get my own wealth. I want to start my own business. And if I wasn't there, maybe he didn't see me. Maybe they never came to my restaurant. Maybe it's just me, you know, but when you're there, we're going to teach you. We're going to give you tools. We're going to teach you about customer service. We're going to teach you how to run a restaurant because that's what we have to do. It's my duty. I have to teach. And again, I can only speak about me. I can't save the world. Yeah. But I can save the people that watch me. I can save the people that touch me. I can save the people that work for me. I do my best, right? You know, so, you know, I just look at it as you have to be that beacon, right? You got to be that shining light to change everything around you. You know, be that leading example.
But I don't think that's anything new under the sun, what you're saying.
No, it's not new.
I think that's what this community has been. You know, it has been a community of people who say, I'll teach you how to do this.
What community are you talking about?
The Black community. I have plenty of examples in my life of people who stuck their foot in the door so that I could pass through.
That's not always out the way we do things, though. You know.
Okay, we get to the topic. Well, what I named this podcast, the Shut Up House. But that only takes about a few seconds to do that. So I want to, the trending topics here I wanted to put out here. Of course, if you guys got anything, you can also add on to something that we don't know about. But I want to take a look at in North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina, to be exact. And matter of fact, before I get into this, I want you, if you're online, I want you to put into your search engine Durham, North Carolina City Council members. Durham, North Carolina City Council members. And get the page where you can see all of their pictures. Now, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's six of them, and there's one vacant seat, so there's no picture for that. But there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's six city council members on the Durham, North Carolina scene at the moment, in power. All of them are minorities. One might be Latino, Javiera Caballero. She might be Latino. Well, let's take for granted she is Latino, Latina. However, the rest are black. Just take a look at them. All of them are minorities. There are no white folks on here. Now, let me go and I'm reading this in the context, particularly to the Ados people, of why it'll be very difficult to get reparations because of what's happening today. Number one, and I'm using that city council. Okay, now, here's the article on Yahoo News. Durham City, North Carolina, City Council rejects a federal jury's recommendation to pay wrongfully convicted man $6 million after he spent two decades in prison. Okay, now, a wrongfully convicted black man who successfully fought to have his murder convictions overturned and received a pardon from the North Carolina governor of those crimes sued the city of Durham, North Carolina for $6 million and won. However, officials, and that's why I want you to go to look up the city council members from Durham, North Carolina. Let's look at their pictures. I'm calling them their mugshots. These six people, these minorities, the one that's Latina, you know, because you got black Latinas too. These six black folks said that this black man does not deserve, they're not paying it. Anyway, however, the city, or I read that part, okay. Daryl Howard is the guy, and you can look him up online, Daryl Howard, Durham, North Carolina. You see his picture, black man. According to the News Observer, a federal jury found retired detective Daryl Dowdy. You know, let's see if we can find out what Daryl Dowdy looks like. Daryl Dowdy. Durham, no, let me see if they have a picture of him online. Let's see. Okay. Let me go back reading the article. All right. According to the News Observer, federal jury found retired detective Daryl Dowdy, who spent 36 years with the city, lied on Daryl Howard in 1995. As a result, Howard spent 21.5 years of an 80-year sentence in prison. A federal jury found Dowdy violated, that's the police officer, violated Howard's civil rights by fabricating evidence and purposefully conducting a poorly run investigation around the case. These actions resulted in the jury convicting Howard of two counts of second-degree murder and one count of arson. The costly trial lasted several weeks, with the city spending more than $4 million in litigation in defense of the detectives. Still, the jury needed an hour to return to court with a decision sided with Howard. Howard and his attorney argued Dowdy was given the authority by way of his badge to set Howard up to be convicted of murdering Doris Washington, 29, and her 13-year-old daughter, Nashonda, in 1991. The two females were found dead in their Few Gardens apartment. DNA evidence suggested that both mother and daughter were sexually assaulted before they were set on fire. However, no DNA or biological evidence linked Howard to the crime scene or as the rapist. At one point, there was eyewitnesses who testified against Howard, but his accounts were scrutinized for being vague and contradictory. The witness reportedly even recanted his story to the police over time. In 2014, Durham senior resident judge Orlando Hudson vacated Howard's conviction, but the state pushed back with an appeal. The Innocence Project decided to represent the 58-year-old, presenting new DNA evidence that led to reversal of his conviction. Originally, Howard asked for $48 million in damages, $2 million for each year that he was incarcerated, plus $5 million for the impact of his imprisonment had on his life. See, that's what I call real reparations evidence in 2022. That's something this man was proven that he was a victim, and he was proven that he was injured in 2022. All right. The jury decided to award him $6 million. Despite finding the jury, the Durham City Council opted to withhold the recommended seven-figure judgment in the case. This decision was made during closed meetings over a three-month period of time. You know what? It'll be interesting. Out of this, there's six people here that I'm looking at. If you haven't got, look it up. Look up Durham, North Carolina City Council members. Their pictures, they're right online. You have three black women, one Latino woman, and two black men. Well, if something happens to one of your kids or loved ones, it'll be interesting to see what the karmic fallout of this will be. City Attorney Kimberly Reberg said that this was the first time a jury made a bad faith finding. So this is a local prosecutor saying that a federal jury, they made a bad faith finding regarding the city employee. Remind me not to visit Durham, North Carolina. That's all I got to say. And they have a cost breakdown of what they spent. They spent over $4 million so far on this case. they spent the city of Durham, North Carolina, the city, you know, they paid Pointer Sproul LLP over $1.5 million in legal fees. They paid Wilson and Ratledge firm over $1.1 million in legal fees. They paid Nelson Mullins, Riley, and Scarborough. They paid them over $200,000. Kenan Carver, they paid him over $650,000. Esquire Deposition Solutions, they paid them a little bit over $40,000. Anyway, it's all itemized here. It's online. For $4,050,000, $667. And a federal jury... No, this man has been injured. You need to help repair his life. You know, all right, we don't say he gets $48 million, but he should at least get $6 million. And, of course, out of that $6 million, you know, the attorney's going to take, you know, a third out of that. All right. So... You know, he'll probably end up with about $4 million himself. Now, of course, we don't know how the taxes go on that, but regardless, my question is to the ADOS people, your operationers. If at least the ones that live in North Carolina, particularly Durham, North Carolina, now, if the black city council, the predominantly black city council in Durham, all right, Javiera Caballero, she's Latina, so we're going to say we're not going to count her in the six city council members, okay? But the rest of them are black, two black women. Two black men. If the city council, the black, predominantly black, overwhelmingly black city council of Durham, North Carolina, voted this over a 3-month period of time now, because that's really dragging their feet, they voted, you know what? This man does not, because basically what he's asking, it's reparations to him. So if they're not going to offer, they're going to spend more money fighting this. And the money they spend fighting it, they may as well pay him, but that's a whole nother story. If he's struggling to get the city of Durham, North Carolina, to pay him, and this is proven that he was violated, that he was injured in contemporary times. What makes you think that in 2022 and beyond that you're going to get anything close to reparations? Because, number one, you have to identify. See, in this man's case, they have identified it was the police detective. What's this dude's name? The police detective, it was proven that he lied on this man. Let me find this guy's name. A federal jury found that, let me get this guy's name. Retired detective Daryl Dowdy, who worked for the city. It was proven in a federal courthouse that Detective Daryl Dowdy violated this man's civil rights, that he lied on him, and some other stuff. It's proven that Daryl Dowdy injured Daryl Howard. is concrete evidence of this. This is now 20. So, and how? What's the proof? Well, the conviction, the false conviction, and he spent 21 and a half years locked up. Okay, all injuries. Now, he had to sue because the city of Durham, North Carolina, he had to sue the city of Durham, North Carolina. Now, you ate those people. Who in the hell are you going to sue? Can't sue the United States government because the United States government didn't exist 300 years ago. It didn't even exist 250 years ago. Well, hold on, wait. Yeah, no. It's United States is sort of fairly a new country. Well, not new country, but young country. Young country. Because you got towns around this world that, you know, like are 500 years old, 1,000 years old. Some are 2,000 to 3,000 year olds. But in any event, so anyway, food for thought. So and this is, well, you know, that's why I play the Claude Anderson piece practically every morning to start this podcast off. Because if this ever was an example of group economics or group politics, they can't get together on it. Of course, we don't know the whole story behind this. But here you have, out of six, I'm saying five. I don't know what the vote count was, but we know overall that these black folk in power in North Carolina, Durham, North Carolina. I don't want to pick out, I don't want to single out the whole state. But and the prosecutor says this is the first time, isn't it some crazy, the first time that a jury has made a bad faith decision. That's a ballsy-ass prosecutor. Well, 619-768-2945, that's the number to call if you ain't have any comments on that. I think this is a perfect example of why I'm not saying reparations on the federal level is impossible, because anything's possible. But Durham, North Carolina is not the only city where you have blacks in power that they're going to co-sign on various things. Now, the, you know, what I find interesting also is that, you know, during the 60s, black folk marched, protested, voted, sprayed, you know, all that. And they have victories. And part of the victory is, okay, in the city of Durham, North Carolina, which is a sizable city, okay, you got basically a black city council. Okay. And that's on the shoulders of the people who marched in the 60s. Okay. And part of the reasons why they were marching in the 60s, and look at people like Maggie Rivers, who was a sacrificial lamb, Martin Luther King, sacrificial. You know, some of these people died because in a case, man, where, you know, blacks getting railroaded in the jail and doing. Here's an example of, okay, let's get involved with the system. You know, let's march and protest. Let's study the system. We've done all that, all right? They're in office. And the jury decided, the federal jury decided, this man deserves, I'm using the word reparations. Because reparations basically means, you know, some type of compensation to repair person who has been injured. So it's been proven that this man was injured. It's been identified of who injured this man. And it's been proven how he was injured and for how long he was injured. And a federal jury decided this should help this man get repaired. City of Durham, North Carolina, you arrested him. You falsely convicted him. You falsely imprisoned him. $6 million. And the black city council. Now look at, I want you to, Durham, North Carolina City Council, look at them. Just look at them. Ados people, look at them. That's, in my opinion, that's why I very seriously doubt you're going to see any type of compensation coming from any government source on reparations based on slavery. I'm not talking about this newfangled reparations like they got in, like they're trying to come up with Asheville, North Carolina, and what they passed over there up in, what do you call that state, Illinois? Evanston, Illinois? Well, as Pianchi says every now and then, and I agree with him on this, not all black people are alike. All right, let's go to the phone lines here. I was trying to find a Claude Anderson piece. I got to hear something. But Claude, he's right, man. We don't practice groupie economics. And out of this black city council in Durham, North Carolina, I'm sure that at least one of these people, if not more, one of these black city council members, they've had some type of family member or loved one hemmed up in the system. area code, your mic is open.
Hotel, Brother L.A., how you doing?
Hotel.
Brother L.A., you know, yesterday you really shocked me yesterday.
I forgot what I said yesterday.
the Emmett Till deal.
Emmett Till economics.
Yeah. And you know what? You're still on a roll today. I am absolutely shocked. I mean, I'm floored that you would take the position that you had taken this morning and yesterday. I mean, I can't believe I'm hearing what I'm hearing from you this morning. There's no such thing as a victim. You've been saying that for the years that I've been listening to you.
I have been guilty of saying that. I have been guilty.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And the thing is, now you're saying that this gentleman is a victim.
No question about it.
I'm speechless. I'm flabbergasted.
You're right. I have said on several occasions, and it's recorded in these archives, I have said that I'm glad you called me on it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I was wrong.
No, you were right. You were right.
Guy's a victim, though. This guy is a victim.
No, he is not a victim.
You don't think so?
According to you, no. He's not a victim.
This guy that I'm talking about today that was awarded $6 million by a federal jury, he was wrongly convicted. The evidence showed it. So
exactly.
he's a victim.
He is, according to your standards and your definition, he is
I have amended my definition.
Say what?
I've amended it.
No, you can't amend it. Because, see, you're going to come up with this again. No, you can't amend it. No, you look. You better be like Jesus when it comes to me. You can't change. For years, you've been saying that there's no such thing as a victim. And I'm not going to let you get away with it this morning. Because what you're doing is, and you worded it very correctly. See, the thing is, you're saying that this man, as an individual, deserves reparations.
I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I'm stating that he is a victim.
Exactly. But the thing is, according to your definition, he's not a victim. And the reason why I said that is because now, as an individual, he's a victim. But now, as a group of people, there's no such thing as a victim, according to you now. So now, if a group of people can't be victims and cry foul, this man can't do it either. Because look, he was found guilty by the system, and
right.
the system found that he was guilty,
right.
and he was judged by.
But the system also found out that he was not guilty.
No, but he was judged by a jury of his peers to say that he was guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So that being the case, he had a legal trial. And the thing is, rightly or wrongly, he was convicted. And the same thing about black folks as a whole. There's evidence that they were in slavery. And there's evidence that, hey, this system did everything it could to keep their knee on their necks. And it's documented in history. And the thing is, they're not a victim either, according to you. So now you can't have it both ways. You either hot or you cold. You can't be lukewarm.
Well,
so now
right, as far as this man is concerned.
No,
all right, let me go this way. As far as this guy is concerned, he is a victim. Let's elevate this too, because I did address ADOS, African Descendants of Slave. All right, what I'm saying to the ADOS crowd, the people that believe in getting reparations based on slavery. Okay. I'm saying if you can prove like this guy did, if you can prove that you have been injured in 2022 or during your lifespan, whenever you was born, if you can prove like this guy proved, then maybe you need to get reparations. But I don't think that can be done.
It's already been done. Now, you can twist and turn all you want to. It's already been done. And the thing is, all you got to do is look at history and see where these people was not permitted to go in and practice capitalism in this country. So now,
I brought up the Republic of Maryland. We're talking about former slaves who, they were slaves, they bought their freedom, they gathered their resources, they went over to, and they started a new nation over there in Africa.
That has nothing to do.
I brought up plenty of examples of former slaves that started towns.
Listen, Brother L.A., you can't get out of it. That was a small, minute number of people. But the vast majority, the 99%, as Herman Cain says, 999% of the people during that era were slaves. So now, yeah, look, nothing's 100%. I'm not going to let you use that one. Because the thing is, those people was able to slip through the net. And they may have had some help. But the vast majority of the group was enslaved. And you can't use that as a justification for not going in. And look, here's my thing about reparations. I done told you this a long time ago. In order to get reparations from this system, you're going to have to go in and you're going to have to declare war. You're going to have to make this system give you reparations, even if it means killing some damn body. Because that's what it's going to take. Because, white folks and black folks, like you, are firmly entrenched that black folks don't deserve reparations as a group. So that's what it's going to take. The only reason I bring up reparations is to make sure that the future generations know how dirty these bastards are and how crooked they are.
Would the city council, for this one isolated case, would the city council in Durham, North Carolina, how do you feel about them saying that they don't want to pay out $6 million?
I feel the same way about them that you feel. They feel that he don't deserve to be repaired. You feel that black folks as a whole don't need to be repaired. So
You're right. Now, you're right. I do not feel that black folks in this country on a whole.
Right.
I do believe that.
That's right.
I'll stand by that. That's true.
There's no difference between them and you and people like you that's black. Because the thing is, you don't feel like black folks as a whole deserve reparations. And they don't feel as a whole that young man, that man, deserves reparations. And I'm going to give you this. The reason why they don't do it, and I'm talking about the city council now, the reason why they don't do it is because they're afraid of the opinions that whites in North Carolina have if they do that. That's why they're doing it. They're afraid that white folks are going to say, well, you know what? They're black and they're just doing it because this man is black. And that's not right. And they fear the repercussions of doing what's right. Same way that
Say
what?
A federal jury said pay the man.
I don't care what the federal jury says. These people are afraid of the repercussions of black folks giving a black man that kind of money for the wrong that was done to him by the system. And that's the way groups of black folks feel about reparations being given to a group, the black group in America. They fear the repercussions that white folks will have country gave reparations. That's all it's all about. And look, I'm glad you brought this subject up, because all you got to do is look at the Durham City Council and look at the objectives to people getting reparations that's black and white, for that matter. But the thing is, it's a direct parallel to this whole question. And if you go back and listen to what you said in your, I guess it's a monologue when you gave the overview of this thing. Listen to it.
Yeah, I was reading off of Yahoo News.
Well, thing is, listen to this broadcast very carefully. And I swear, what you'll do is you'll find that the objectives to black folks getting reparations as a group is the same as those people in Durham, the city council in Durham, North Carolina. Now, I'm going to give you this one. Now, when it comes to giving reparations and giving anything to help other people, we're satisfied with that. We don't have any objections. and I'm gonna give you an example. Israel and Egypt has been getting $3 billion for I don't know how many years, and the reason why they're doing that is because they said that those people suffered in the Holocaust, something that didn't even happen on this soil. And the thing is, in order to make sure that they kept peace with that country, that they have illegally gone over there and taken from the Palestinians, they're saying, we're going to give you $3 billion a year to support that government. I didn't hear not one black conservative or one white conservative voice their opinions against it. And that didn't even happen here. But just as soon as black folks bring up something about reparations, you hear the monkeys in the peanut gallery start talking that crap. But the thing is, if you look at what that Durham City Council is doing, they're a bunch of sellouts. That's what they are. They're scared of the white opinion or the white blowback that will come from black folks helping black folk. And they are going to do it. Now you get. Now you don't have to agree with it, but just go back and listen to your broadcast. Same thing.
Now, what about yesterday? What shocked you about yesterday? Emmett Till economics.
Well, you know, you got other people that want to speak on this subject. We can do that another day because, you know, I found that very, very insulting what you said yesterday. But
Emmett Till economics. Oh, okay. Well, all right.
Well, look, I'm going to put it to you this way. You know what? I don't want to take up a lot of time because you got other callers, but I'm going to give you a preview of what I would have said.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't economics. It was pure racism. And I'm going to tell you why, because you know what my definition of racism is.
Right.
Self-preservation, survival of the fittest. And I'm going to give you this very simple. Self-preservation and survival of the fittest is the laws of nature, aren't they? That's what they are, whether you agree with it or not. And here's the thing. If you look at what's happening out in the wild, what is the role of a male mammal out in the wild?
Protection.
Of what?
Protection of his species, tribe, herd, pride,
and
whatever you call it.
The female in that species.
Right.
And the thing is this. Also, if you look at it, the female always responds to the strong male, doesn't she?
Yep, the alpha male.
Okay. That white boy or white males have been conditioned to say, look, you keep away from my females. And their sole purpose is to make sure that you don't interfere with their females or advance towards them at all. And what happened is, when that woman said to that nigga, pussy that mean, first thing came in his mind, I dare him to go in and make an approach to my woman. Just like a male mammal will in the wild. And the thing is, that Moses Wright, that was his name, right?
His uncle.
His uncle, he was a punk. Just like Trayvon Martin's dad is a punk. Because, see, when somebody come to your house and threaten your house, they're infringing on your territory. As a mammal, and what he was supposed to do above all things was to protect his house and his family, and he
now
didn't
you,
do
you
that.
You bring up a very interesting point, and I'm glad you brought that up because I've thought about it, never voiced it, because I'm figuring, man, his mother sent him down because, you know, Emmett had only been down there 5 days when all that went down. So his uncle, you know, the head of the household, you know, his wife there, he's got his two sons there. That's a hell of an awkward situation that he was in. How could he have handled that? Because he was outnumbered. weapon-wise. How could he have handled it?
You know what, Brother L.A.? Look, you're a young man.
Now, of course, during that time, he should have probably had a gun in his house. That's what I'm thinking.
No, no, you're a young man, L.A., so, I mean, you didn't, I mean, you haven't been out of the line.
Yeah, I didn't that. That's why I asked how you think that should have been handled. Because, like I said, I'm looking at it, man, that's a hell of an awkward situation.
I don't give a damn about the numbers. Hey, look, you go down fighting when somebody break in your damn house. I don't care what they got. When you come beyond that porch and you come in my house, I'm supposed to risk my life and limb to make sure that, hey, look, I protect who I'm supposed to protect. And here's the other thing, Brother L.A. What is the rule that they used against the Indians? Kill the damn chief, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kill the chief. And the white man's slogan is, hey, look, cut the head off and you kill the snake. See, when those savages came in his house, he should have picked up whatever he could find in his hands and tried to deal with them. He would have got my respect. But the thing is, he didn't do that. He was scared. And look, do you know what? I would have been
now,
scared, too.
Now, that might have cost him Beasley. In other words, they could have got him, wiped him out. His wife was there and his two sons.
I don't give a damn. You do. You look, that's what you're there for. Even if it means dying, you're supposed to protect yours and what belongs to you. That's the law of the jungle.
Law of nature.
Even if you outnumber, you're supposed to set the example. Look, get one of them if you don't get no damn body else. Because, look, in the end, you're going to die anyway. That young boy died anyway, didn't he? But you get one. I don't care if you got a butcher knife. You get one to let them know whenever you do something like this, somebody's going to risk getting killed, or you're going to inflict some damages, or you're going to make sure that some casualties were taken. That's what it's all about. See, we black men are punks. See, the white man has put the fear of God in us. Ain't no way in the world you're supposed to let somebody come in your house and just take what they want and you don't do nothing, L.A. Come on, man.
Well, you're right. Well, let me ask you, let's go back 2 weeks. Will Smith and Chris Rock. Chris Rock just let it roll off his back like he did?
Will Smith did the right thing, according to nature.
Had Chris Rock fought back on international television that night, that's a very bad look on black people wouldn't get to host the Oscars for another 50 years.
Who cares? Look, Brother L.A., you got to defend yourself. Now, come on, man.
I agree. You do have to defend yourself. And like I said, in the Emmett Till case, his uncle was in a hell of – from my point of view, because I never lived back then, I know when I was coming up, my stepfather – and I remember one night somebody knocked on the door, and it was kind of a late hour. Knocked on the door, and my stepfather came. My mother was at the door. She didn't open the door, but my stepfather got out of bed, came down the steps fast with a gun, and opened up the door. And all
that's
I know
right.
is nobody ever knocked on that door that time of night ever again while they were living. You know, they were in D.C. at the time. But he was like that, and That's how he
wrote. You're validating my point. All I'm saying is this. We black men do not want to sacrifice for the protection of the whole. And I'm going to go a step further. When that happened, Moses Wright should have called, he was a preacher, he should have called some other black men that was willing to help him out to say, look, I know they're coming. Based on the environment of that time, mm-hmm. Hey, they coming. Who's willing to come out here and help me and sacrifice for the safety of my boy? So now, the thing is, Moses Wright was derelict in his duties, just like Trayvon Martin's dad is derelict in his duties. And the Brown daddy over there in St. Louis. So all I'm telling you is this, Brother L.A., Individually, you're supposed to do what you need to do to make sure that justice is served.
Okay,
because
now with Trayvon, before we go to the next caller, hold it. Trayvon's dad. Okay. Now, by the time I don't know all the logistics of that night, but I'm guessing by the time Trayvon's dad knew about what happened, Zimmerman was already arrested. I don't know if he bonded out right away or whatever. But how do you think his dad should have handled that? Because, you know.
I just told you. Do you, look, is Zimmerman still around?
Yeah, Zimmerman's still around.
Is he still in that town?
He's, you know, I don't know where he's at. He could be in Florida somewhere. I know he did sue. I think he sued the mother, Trayvon Martin, if not both parents. He was talking shit, talking about they should have raised a better son. He deserved an ass whipping just on that statement.
No, Brother L.A. Hold, stop right there. He deserves death. He deserves death. Even if it means that Trayvon Martin's daddy goes to the electric chair, or they gas him, or they put him in front of a firing squad. You kill my boy, and then you ride around town, or either you in that state, and you still breathing, he deserves death. You kill my mama, you kill my daddy, you kill my wife. I'm just like these gangsters. These gangsters, they drive by shooting on stuff that really is not even important. Then you mean to tell me he can't do it? Okay. So now, I'm just saying, and look, I know that somebody's probably listening to this broadcast. I know that the NSA is probably saying, who's that fool? We better watch him. But the thing is this, Brother L.A., until people realize that they have to pay a penalty for doing somebody wrong, they're going to keep doing. And we'll go back to your original broadcast today. If you listen to what you just said, go back and listen to the recording. The archives.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing that you feel about black folks as a group getting reparations is the same way them people feel in Durham City Council. And they black. But they just white folks with black face. And let me deal with the economics of this because I'm all over the place. Rahm Emanuel said, and you know who that bastard is. He was
former mayor of Chicago.
Yeah, and he was Obama's chief of staff. Now,
yes,
dealing with the cotton situation and the economic part of Emmett Till, I'm going to quote Rahm Emanuel. He says, you never let a serious crisis go to waste. And what I mean by that is an opportunity to do those things you think could not do before. So somebody took advantage of that opportunity once Moe's right had to leave. They say, hey, look, there's money that we can get. And they got it. And the thing
now,
is,
see, that's why I said, in my opinion, it was just my opinion. Because I don't know what happened after that. But that's why I said the primary motivator was economic.
But
most people would say it was motivated by race.
It was.
Now,
and the thing I go back to
survival of the fittest,
self-preservation. A white man has been trained that you don't mess with my woman. A white man has been trained that no nigger has a right to challenge my authority. That's where it all started. Now, that economics thing was an offshoot, but the primary reason that all of this happened was because of the laws of nature. Racism, that's what it is. Now, that other thing came later. Hey, look, he's gone. Because now, look, you done said this year before. That could have took Moses Wright's land even without this incident with Emmett Till happening. Sundown towns, you've said it. That could have gone to him and said, nigga,
true.
You better
get they make him leave by sundown.
That's right. So now they could have taken that land years before this Emmett Till thing come up. But the thing that started this whole thing was survival of the fittest and self-preservation. And the thing is, hey, look, the male species of a mammal is to protect his female companion and to make sure that, hey, look, y'all protect my territory. That's what that's all about. Now, you can spend it any way you want to, just like you're trying to spend this reparations thing and the city council there in Durham. But that's what it's all about. See, Brother Elliot, I get down to the bare bones of this thing. Now, you can disagree, but the thing is, you know in your heart, I'm right. Now, bring your boy in here. Let me hear what he got to say.
If we're speaking on a strictly, because your definition of racism is based on basically nature, DNA, how we're wired as a species. So if any definition of racism, I would say that would be, if I had to pick one definition that I would agree with, it would be that one, based on nature.
What else can you agree with that?
Then, as well as now, if you say, I mean, men get killed all the time. I know a guy I went to college with, somebody said something that he didn't agree with coming out of a club one night some years ago, and he got killed in the parking lot of the club.
Now, that's different. So, that's a crime of passion. That's a crime of passion. But when you're talking about what we're talking about, because look, some of the naysayers will say, well, what about Russia and Ukraine? Well, that's survival, that's self-preservation and survival of the fittest. But you can't classify it under, now racism is just another name for it. But when you look at Putin, the only reason he's doing what he's doing is because he don't want NATO to infringe on his territory. He said, I've given enough, and if I let NATO come in here and put missiles in here, I will not be able to react. And the thing is, I'm protecting my territory, which is self-preservation of my nation. And the thing is, survival of the fittest. I'm going to put as many men out there as I can to make sure that you don't advance any further because you invade my territory, just like a lion would with another lion coming in there to invade his territory. So now, there's different names for nature, the laws of nature, but I'm just giving you one name for it, which is America.
You're right. I don't know if I shared this story here. I got a little chihuahua here that my mother left behind, and female chihuahua. So I let her run free. So one day, it was and she always challenges bigger dogs. So one day, she was attempting to chase a much bigger dog away. So I went to get my dog's name is Star. Went to go get Star. Then the dog that I was trying to save, pull back Star before she got to the bigger dog. That male dog, he growled and jumped at me. Wait a minute.
That's right. See, everything practices the laws of nature except black folk. That's why we're in the shape we're in. Because the thing is, and look, your boy always brings this up, well, who is black? Well, the deal is this. See, other racial ethnic groups don't have that problem. See, you attack a Hispanic. See, he don't come with this stuff like we do. All of them come at your ass. That's the way it works.
Before we go to Pinar, remember the Elian Gonzalez case in South Florida? Well, man, that's about, I don't know, 20 years ago, whatever, where Elian Gonzalez was, probably need to do a podcast on with it. He was, his mother got on one of these boats from Cuba, and she drowned in the boat right over. Elian, he lived. So he was taken in by family in Miami. And, they looked out for him. But then the judge ruled that, but his father, or Gay, who was separated or divorced from his mother at the time, he was in Cuba the whole time. So he wanted to get his son out of the United States back home to Cuba. And the family in the United States fought that until the judge said he's got to go back to Cuba. So the family in the United States of Elian Gonzalez said, no, we want to keep him here. You know, Janet Reno interceded, and she gave an order for the family to give back, you know, send him back to Cuba. And then she ordered the United States Marshals, long story short, Miami, Dade County, Florida, which Miami is in, which is like 75-80% Latino. Many of them come from Cuba or other Latin American countries. They bucked. I've never seen this before with law enforcement, but law enforcement down there, they bucked Janet Reno, and they wouldn't participate.
Even the Hispanic judge ruled that that little boy wasn't supposed to go back, and she was a Hispanic. And Janet Reno had to intercede. And look, outsiders had to come in and snatch that boy. But I'm
outsiders had to come in.
That's right. But they weren't Hispanic.
They were not Hispanic. But the sheriff, the police chief, I mean, on a local, state, and federal level, they bucked the United States government and won. I've never seen
that. I rest my case. Now, your boy might have a different opinion, but he can't say I'm wrong. And if he does, he's lying.
I followed that case.
I did too.
They did not. Yeah, they had to send somebody that wasn't Latino.
That's right.
They had to send
boy that went down there was the one that spied out, hey, how you can get in here? There was a white fellow that he sent in there as a friend, which that's something else you got to watch. He figured out, he was in there to find out, hey, how can we get in here and get this boy? But he went in there as a friend. But all you got to do is think that.
You know
that
one. Nobody was brought up on charges. No prosecution. Is just they collectively bucked and with no repercussions. But you got to collectively buck to do that.
Of course. But you ain't going to get no black folks to do that. Just
which
like them
is
black
why
folks.
I don't think you're going to have group reparations happen anytime soon. I'm not saying it's impossible, but due to the fact, like, that's why I brought up this case. I just ran across it this morning in North Carolina, in Durham, North Carolina, that when you got a predominantly black city council, there are no white people on this council.
They are white folk.
Well,
because they're in fear of white folk. That's the fear. And the thing is, they're going to do what they think white folks will agree to or like for them to do. They're white folk with black skin. So now, though you don't give them a pass, because they know, hey, look, we better not do this. Because white blowback is going to be so bad until, you know, hey, we ain't going to be able to live in this state. They know that.
Well,
there
goes
back
to Claude Anderson. Their backers that put them in office, I'll co-sign with you on that one. The co-signs that put them in office overwhelmingly are white businessmen.
And not only that, you got Durham, population is 44% black or more.
Okay.
And the thing is, you don't see none of them standing up for that brother. None of them. See, that's where we differ from other folk.
What's the major employers up in Durham? Is it Duke? Is it Duke and Durham?
Yeah,
there's
Duke
a lot of old tobacco money up in that area, isn't there?
Yeah, there's plenty of black money there. I mean, you got North Carolina Mutual there. You got the Farmers and Agriculture Bank that's there. You got a lot, and look, you got NCCU there. You got a lot of black power. Well, they can't use the power because they don't know how to use power. But look, they got enough finances, and they got enough, resources, and they got enough talent that they could go in and put pressure on that city council. But again, you can't get us to do it because we have been brutalized to the point that we fear. what outsiders think, mainly white folk. So now, go ahead, bring Pionk in here. I want to hear
all
what
right,
he
well,
got to say.
All right,
and tell him
let
I
me
said
do
hello.
That.
And because I'm going to mute myself while he talks.
Okay. 314 area code. Your mic is open. Good morning. Well, it's afternoon here. So, good morning there. Good afternoon.
You don't spend over an hour listening to that crazy renegade mess. Always talk about this slavery stuff. They want the federal government to pay. If Durham want to pay some Negroes some damn money, that's their money. Let them do it. But the federal government
don't want to pay it.
Well, then,
and Durham, North Carolina, the city council of Durham, North Carolina, they don't want to pay out the $6 million that the jury said they should pay.
Well, they shouldn't have to pay then. What's $6 million for what? I didn't get that.
The man was a man who happened to be a black man. Was a federal jury found that he was falsely convicted. They overturned the conviction, and he spent 21 and a half years locked up in North Carolina. So a federal jury said that this man should be paid $6 million. The city council of North Carolina has said, no, we do not want to pay him. They've already spent $4 million in fighting the case.
What did he do?
Nothing. What happened was
they just pulled him off the street while he's walking the street, and he got locked up. He had to do something.
I don't know all that part of it, but he was locked.
Why are you arguing with a fool, and you don't have all the details?
I'm saying, I read what happened. He was arrested.
Well, what happened? Let's go on to another one. Let's forget that one. I'm not going to answer nothing on that. Let's go to Zimmerman. You talking about kill Zimmerman. All right. Suppose Zimmerman's relatives say, we're going to kill what you got left. Huh?
Hey, that.
See, when you're talking to a fool will paralyze you in your tracks. He will limit your ability to think beyond the circumference that they draw. Kill Zimmerman. His Zimmerman relatives say, okay, we're going to kill the rest of yours.
And some people have that mentality.
You're damn right. That's what they should have.
Now, let me ask you this. What if, this is just a what if, theoretical, what if Trayvon was your son? Well, how would you have
Trayvon should have ran his ass free. I would have taught my kids when a stranger's behind him to run home. Don't be trying to fight a man.
And you have said that on occasion. You have said that.
Did your parents teach you that?
Not that particular.
Trayvon's daddy laying up over some damn woman's house and his wife.
Back. But back when I
you
was
ain't
told,
gonna beat no
right,
man.
Back.
You're not gonna whoop no grown
oh,
man.
No,
why
no,
you
no,
gonna
no,
fight
no,
a grown
no.
man?
No, I'm not. Yeah, I never. Fortunately, I never had a situation where I had to fight a grown man.
Well, did your parents tell you when you got strangers, you supposed to run? If Negroes running at you trying to shoot you, you gonna run?
Yeah.
So you gonna turn around and try to fight somebody because they light skin? And call them crackers and all that stuff.
No, I never got that.
It seems like to me that boy had some bad upbringing. And you look at the example of his daddy laying up in some woman's house, not his wife, not his baby's mama, and got his son over there where he can witness that type of ill-mannered behavior, ratchet behavior. What do you expect out of the child? Think. As far as the boy in Cuba, he should have went back to the boy in Miami. He should have went back to Cuba where his biological father was.
And that's what eventually did happen.
what was the whole idea about slaves going back to Africa? Robert Brock argued that thing. Their domicile was Africa. They wasn't U.S. citizens. What if a U.S. citizen that's wanted by the law goes to another country? An African that's here illegally, and they send his ass, he gets gold back, and he's wanted for a crime here. What do you think is going to happen? He's going to be extradited.
Extradited.
And brought back here to face justice. All the hoopla about this Congolese that got killed fighting with the police, what the heck you think is going to happen when you try to take a weapon from a police officer? What you sold? I mean, what's the idea you taking it from him? You struggling with him? You gonna take
so
all
that's
those?
The case up in that's the case up in Michigan. You're talking about?
Absolutely. What are you gonna do when you get the weapon? I mean, what do you think he would have done when he took the white police officer's weapon?
Naturally, I would go in self-defense mode, thinking that he's gonna try to use the taser on me.
Is not a taser a deadly weapon?
Well, whatever he tried to get from that policeman, it's a threat. It would be perceived as a threat to the person he took it from.
Taser's supposed to be used from a distance, not right up on him. He was probably trying to take that cop's gun. What was he going to do? I tell you what, he's from the Congo?
Yep. I don't know
he
how
wouldn't
long
have done
he's been
that
in this country,
shit. Wait a minute. He wouldn't have done, let me tell you something. He wouldn't have done that mess with Congolese police that looked just like him. He knew better. He wouldn't do that with them. He do that stuff here in America because what he's been seeing in the news. You ain't going to do that over in the Congo, Nigeria, Ghana. They will whoop your head. They will kill you and throw you in the back of a SR small size pickup truck. And they won't be soft in how they throw you back there. They throw you back there like a sack of flour. And if anybody owe any reparation, blacks owe reparation to Africa for the damages and stuff that their ancestors done that caused their asses to be kicked out of Africa, ended up over here. It only makes sense, right?
Well, that'll be a long process.
Well, wait a minute. If you commit a crime and run to France, they gonna extradite you. The crime don't go away. You committed the crime.
Right. Well, what I'm saying, the reason why it'll take that's a long process because most of these people are not going to be willing to do the homework. You know, tracing back the family tree, who did
what. Well,
I
tell you what, I'll do some.
That's expensive.
I'll talk to families over there, and I'll say, look, for a certain charge, give me $50,000, I'll sign four or five of the guys of your descendants that's living today. And it's supposed to be getting reparations. Put a lien on that. Go to the world court and put a lien on it to stop it.
And see, the majority of people that are trying to get reparations in this country are not going to. If it's not free, because what you're talking about, you got to pay investigation fees and travel expenses and all that other stuff. They're not going
to
pay it.
Not
if it's not free,
the
they're not going to deal with
it's
it.
Not up to the, it's not up to the ones that's going to receive it. It's up to the ones that want to do it on behalf of. But here's the thing. Let's talk about this behalf of, this adjudication. As I said before, as the court said, what black person back in slavery gave the permission for somebody today to adjudicate for them? And also, what right did they have that being that they were not U.S. citizens? There was no United Nations, right?
No.
I doubt it was a world court. No world court.
No, there was no world court back then, no United Nations. And in most cases, there was no United States of America.
Absolutely. And quote-unquote Negroes have been selling themselves off into slavery way before they even recognize a white face. Matter of fact, as I said before, and you got to give a claim to it, because you want to take a claim on every other thing that came out of Africa. They taught the world slavery, including sacrificial slavery and chattel slavery. So what was laws was broken? I mean, think about it. What no U.S. is back in the 1600s? What
well,
laws
there
was broken?
No United States, and there was no, which means there was no law, black letter law as we know it. There was, it's a free, back then it was wide open. You can do what you wanted to do.
You damn right you could. And why everybody always want to bring just white folks to the carpet? What about all the blacks that benefit from it? All the black kings and queens, the Budweiser kings and queens. What about them making all the money off of getting, actually they never did get paid what they should have had come and do them due to the damages that was done. That's why they got rid of them. If you had paid your compensation, then the other things you possibly could have been facing, well, they were going to kill you. They was going to kill you. So if they didn't get restitution to the umpteenth degree, you still owe. That's why the curses has been put on some of these foods. You still owe. You cursed.
It looks that way in some cases.
How much reparation do these idiots that's been shooting people up in Chicago? And by God, I got to update this, my information, because it's as good as last Tuesday.
Now, you are right with the current stuff. People could sue people who got shot, and that is easily proven in court.
You need
you
to
can't sue them
one
for damage.
Need to sue the other. You're absolutely right. They should put civil suits on every damn thing that has happened to them, just in case these fools win the bingo. Talk that crazy-ass mess. And see, they want to go after the federal government because they know that they ain't going to get nothing locally and statewide.
Well, the ones that, like Evanston, that have passed something, their reparations legislation has nothing to do with slavery. Not, absolutely nothing to do with slavery.
Well, they talking about this, that crap that Sheila Jackson Lee is trying to put forth. And at the same time, she want to take everybody's guns. You see what
that's
I'm talking about?
Now,
what kind of damn sense is that? You're talking about H.R. 40, a study. Well, a study, I mean, the court cases have told you that, one, the statute of limitation is up. Then you got judges, you got lawyers want to say, well, they couldn't go to court. Well, that's not true. There's incidents of blacks taking whites to court all throughout the annals of time of some sort. Hell, matter of fact, your first Supreme Court justice in the United States, Jesse Franklin, 1778, I believe it was, he was black, a Supreme Court justice that could put your butt to jail. To death, that is.
Now, what was his name again?
Jesse Franklin.
Jesse Franklin, okay.
How often did you look up stuff when that other idiot was talking to you?
I looked up the city council of North Carolina, and there's something else he mentioned. I looked up. I constantly take notes.
You know, we got these
stuff.
Failures, and then they come up with all these ideas. They need some money. People want somebody to pay them for their ventures. That's fair. Adventures don't even work out on paper. Don't make no damn common sense. Don't make no damn, it's twisted logic, and they want somebody else's money in order to make it work because apparently they have squandered theirs throughout their lifetime. It's just a failure. Just a failure.
Now, I found Jesse, Judge Jesse, I found him.
So here's the thing. It's like people talk about we were treated bad. Blacks in America.
Identify who we is first.
you got to identify who we is, because all was not treated bad, like those that want to portray their particular case. I ain't never been refused to sit down in a restaurant. Have you?
Never.
I ain't never been told I could sit on the front of the in my lifetime. Have you?
Never.
So why do they say that we, and they're trying to incorporate we in this all-encompassing we of black people? Is Derek Jeter black? He looks white to me.
I've only consciously, I've only experienced, in my opinion, one instance, and it really wasn't directed at me, of racism. I was in second grade in New Orleans, Louisiana, spending the night at my aunt and uncle's house. And one Sunday night, somebody threw, we were in the back then watching television, somebody threw through the, we heard a crash through the front window. So our uncle went up there and somebody threw a brick through the window. And with a note on it, niggas get out. I stayed with my grandparents after that for a little bit. But then years later, and I forgot about it. And then years later, I found out that my uncle, now this is in New Orleans, Louisiana, they were the first black couple to move in an all-white neighborhood. Some years later when I went back, their whole neighborhood had turned black. It wasn't the hood.
It wasn't the hood
because we're talking about people that had, they earned pretty good incomes. So it wasn't run down.
Well,
it was a nice, well-manicured neighborhood. But that's the only incident that I recall in my life so far where I can say race was a factor.
You know what? I'm going to tell you, black neighborhoods need to do the same thing when you got some old ratchets moving in the community. They got their cars all up on blocks, taking out transmissions and rear outs in the front of their yard. Trash day.
Mm-hmm.
See, they ain't used to paying subscriptions to trash. The trash is piled up with pizza boxes, Chinese food boxes, and everything else. Sitting there in the front. Trash blowing all down the street. They cut the grass, they blow their damn clippers out in the street to be washed down the sewers if it rains. You don't want to be living around that damn mess, do you?
Nope.
I mean, just think about it. So you say whites flee. Do you not know that blacks flee also? But they always want to blame it on that poor white man, saying that because he flee from the same thing blacks are fleeing from, he's the racist, and blacks are not even mentioned. Just like in Ferguson. Blacks fled Ferguson. As fast anything, anybody else. Because they don't want to be around that damn ratchet. The schools are messed up. Ferguson Florissant used to be a damn good school district. See, they had to combine Florissant with Ferguson because when blacks started moving in those areas, whites left. So
yeah,
they didn't have enough
schools. Yeah, I went to college with a guy from Florissant. What's Florissant like now? Because the guy I went to college with, he was a white dude.
Florissant is the seventh richest black community because blacks are fleeing other blacks out of St. Louis and running to Florissant. So Florissant has become the seventh richest black community in the country, number seven.
Now, what was the demographics of Florissant back in the 60s and 70s?
He was a vast majority white.
Okay, yeah, because I went to school with him in the late 70s.
See, here's the thing: what you got some black organizations out there do that block bus.
Mm-hmm.
See, if one house is vacant, they will pay to move a black family in that block, in that house. Then when whites and blacks see that, of course, they won't react immediately, but after a period of time, telltale signs will appear. And they say, we're getting the hell out of here. Black North St. Louis, which is heavily Democratic, condemnation all over the place, just terrible, man, just terrible. So when all the decent homes was either condemned, they not, you know, they ain't decent once they condemned, and blacks moved out of them, or whoever moved out of them, and they became tore up. You know, a vacant house, well, the kids going to bust out the window for some reason. And I ain't saying every blacks is the only one, but they just can't stand a solid plate glass window. I don't know if it's their own reflection that they're looking at, that they got to throw rocks at, or what the hell. But they just, what happened? They bust out all the windows. They ain't got no place to stay. So then politicians say, well, let's move them over here to South St. Louis, which is heavily white. And then whites started moving. Then 80,000 Bosnians was relocated in South St. Louis. 80,000.
That's a lot.
And you know, the funny thing about them, none of them are unemployed. They got businesses that service their own culture and ethnic groups. Work out fine. But then here comes the crime. That's why I say some people is cursed, man. They cursed. They even cursed in action.
It is a common denominator with a lot of immigrants. They're business. Merchant-oriented, start businesses. And
some of these people are cursed either in their actions or with their big mouths. One of the two. And I know it sounds horrible, but hey, you don't try to label it with every other excuse, slavery, broken homes, mental disease.
PTSD.
Took the shots down. Slave syndrome, post-traumatic slave syndrome, all kinds of stuff. They don't try to label. It just don't play out. It just don't equate. Now they're coming up talking about the disparity in wealth. Well, hell, look at your kids. Your kids go to college and take up low-paying majors. So is a low-paying major going to help you eliminate the wealth gap between, now listen at this, between Nigerian and native-born blacks? I ain't even talking about white. Leave them out the picture. Leave them out of the picture. In New York, Jamaica, Queens, the Jamaicans have a household income greater than whites. So,
oh, yeah, yeah. I know, like the D.C. area, you got Nigerians, Ethiopians. A lot of them outpace whites.
They outpace native black. They outpace that native-born black American. Am I right?
You're right. And we might go over those statistics tomorrow.
So are you going to try to eliminate the wealth gap between native black-born Americans to the immigrants that have came here and been here? Is that what the... is that what the reparations supposed to do? Eliminate that equity gap? No, I tell you what, give them $500,000, and within a short period of time, it will be right back where it came from.
And that's what Dr. Umar Johnson says.
Why would you give somebody?
It will be.
See, here's the thing. You already got it. Look. L.A., you got money in your pocket that's nice and warm and safe and dry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why are you going to turn around and give that money to somebody that you know eventually in a short period of time you will have it right back in your pocket where it's nice and warm, safe and dry? Don't make no sense. What you gain? You didn't gain anything. Matter of fact, the dollars you gave out, you may not get them all back, so you're going to end up with what? A loss.
That's true.
A loss on yet another futile idea.
That's true.
I see, and you know there's nothing wrong with it. a lot of people start businesses. But where are they buying the stuff, the wholesale and stuff that they're putting on their shelves? They're getting it from the Chinese.
In most cases, you're right.
They're not manufacturing it.
True.
So you don't worry about that. That will take care of itself. 324,000 black males killed by other black males and 35. Leave it alone. It will take care of itself. Police do not rush to calls nowadays. You know why? Because the people that they're going to assist and save is the ones that's out there marching like fools talking about defund and dissolve the police. So why would you help that which wants to eliminate you? You don't do those things, L.A. Think.
I know in Detroit, the police don't come out unless it's a homicide. A detective doesn't come out, that is, a detective.
Yeah, and a homicide means what?
A detective won't come out unless it's a homicide.
Yeah, but even think on that. A homicide means what? Somebody's laying there dead. They ain't going to be struggling with you. They ain't going to ask you, what you stopping me for? You ain't got no business stopping. Oh, that's the safest kind to come out on. You can take your time, chew your gum like Telly Savalas, Coach Joe, and you can have your coffee. No, suck your Tootsie Roll Pop.
Lollipop. Tell us some lollipop. Tootsie Pops or yeah. Whatever. Whatnot.
All right, man.
Well,
I don't want to take up all your money.
So we're going to wrap it up for today. Everyone have a good rest of the day.